So, like, where'd you grow up?
I grew up north of Boston. So there's like a little triangle of towns.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a triangle with an, or maybe it's a square, because there's like the city of Lynn, the city of Salem, and then there's two towns next to both of those. That's called Marblehead and Swampscott. And I have like ties to all four, but it's like 30 minutes north of Boston. It's like a fishing town. So like my mom and dad moved from Boston to Swampscott when they had me. And then later on, obviously, like my dad moved to Marblehead. They didn't work out. He got kicked out for doing crack.
Really?
Yeah. And that was interesting. Like, so the Swampscott house, like, so I lived with my mom and my dad, but they got divorced, or like she kicked him out like when I was like 9 months old or something, because he was doing crack and like in Lynn, which is, there's a little limerick about the city of Lynn, which is right next door.
Yeah.
And it's called, it goes like, Lynn, Lynn, the city of sin, you never come out the way you came in.
That sounds pretty treacherous.
It is treacherous.
Yeah. Wow.
Totally. Yeah. But then, so we heard a beep.
Yeah.
Is that okay? We just keep going?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, so then my dad was kicked out and he was living in Lynn. And so when he was still using. He's got like 19 years sober now.
Really?
Yeah. But when he was still using, like I would go over to his place and it was like his crack den basically. Like, and he was just so like, oh, like, you know, like crying all the time and being like, I can change. I'm going to get better for you.
Yeah.
You know, but then, so my mom, you know, was like, we were just living in the same house that they were living in. And then eventually my dad developed a relationship with our next door neighbor. So then our houses were separated by a driveway. So my dad was doing crack in my next door neighbor's basement. And so I would go over, like I would go outside and go across the street or not across the street, across like the driveway. And then there was my dad and,
how old were you?
My dad got sober when I was like 5 or 6. So this was like for the
do you remember that?
5 years of my life.
Do you
yeah.
Five, oh, what do you remember?
I remember her house. She had like this little rat terrier dog. And she would drape her underwear in a clothesline, like right facing my mom's house. So my mom was just always like, he's like over there. And yeah, I mean, my dad was just like he was like, you know, he wasn't my dad.
Yeah.
Like my mom always told me that whenever he would come over, or whenever I would be like wondering about where he was, I would be like, oh, like is Uncle Daddy coming? It's like Uncle Daddy, because he wasn't really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you recognize him as your dad though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like eventually.
Yeah.
I feel like I just didn't really understand, you know, I didn't really feel like I had like a man in my life that was representing like a father figure.
Yeah.
And obviously like my dad's been sober for most of my life. So it was really just those formative years that like.
Those are important though.
Yeah, they are. They yeah. definitely are.
Yeah.
And you know, they shape, like I have like memories of my mom and it's honestly crazy. Like I could do a whole podcast about my dad.
Let's go.
Whatever. But like all of his ex-girlfriends are like still in my life and like, well, except for Aunt Sherry, she was one of my dad's ex-girlfriends and she actually like helped raise me with my mom when my dad was out doing crack. So like, I had like a very powerful relationship with this woman and, she died when I was 6 or 7, like right before or after my dad got sober. I'm really not sure the layover. But then like, I remember like being like rushed to like a birthday party. Like my mom was carrying me and Aunt Sherry was there and they were like pushing my dad away and he was like sobbing and he was like, please, like, you know, those wails that we have when
yeah.
we're like strung out and it's just like, you're just not there. You know what I mean? That's kind of like pretty much sums up like my early memories of when he was using.
Yeah. I have a core memory too.
Yeah. What's your core memory?
My mom, she really wanted to start a restaurant and my dad was doing very well from, we were living in upstate New York in Rochester. My dad's working for General Electric.
My dad's ex-girlfriend worked for General
really?
Electric too. Yeah.
Yeah. She's getting her PhD. My dad's getting his PhD at Rochester Technical Institute while he was still going to working at General Electric. And my mom had this like passion to start a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so basically I'll talk about it later. I don't want to talk much about me, but like basically she got these loans from these Chinese immigrants that gave them their life savings because my mom sold them so hard on it.
Yeah.
And when it stopped, when it failed, because restaurants fail usually, you know?
Yeah, it's
and
very rare.
They knocked on my dad's door like, yo, your wife gave a promissory note that you'd pay us back if it failed. Mm-hmm. My dad's like, I have no idea. What were you talking about?
What do you mean?
So all I remember is just being on the staircase, pleading, crying, and my dad is yelling at my mom saying, Sala, Sala. That means fire. It means basically, like, bye, bitch, like burn. Uh-huh. Sala means fire.
Yeah.
It means like, it means get the fuck out of my face. And that's all that I remember. That's my core memory. Mm. You know, so I can relate. You know, yeah. I still think about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm 40.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Those things, they're part of you. You know?
For sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You don't have a Boston.
No. I mean, like, honestly, sometimes, like, people will hear it, but, like recently I was at a meeting and I was, like, asked to do, like, the 12 traditions and, like, someone came up to me afterwards and I was like, are you from Boston? And I was like, I don't, yeah, but not really, like, outside of Boston.
Was that a Boston person, too?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it takes one to know one.
It takes one to know one for sure. I mean, that's the thing, too. My dad is from, my mom doesn't have an accent. My mom actually grew up in Guadalajara in Mexico. Her family moved there when she was, like, really young. So her roots and childhood are mostly spent living in Mexico.
So you're part Mexican?
No. But, like, my...
Sorry, I mean, I don't mean... Like,
no. Like, it's, like, you know, it's, like, confusing. Because it's, like, she grew up there and she, like, lived in Mexico and my grandparents died in Mexico. But, like, ethnically speaking, I'm not Mexican. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Altogether, Mexican is, like, there's so many different...
Yeah.
How do you say it? Like, different types of people from Mexico. But, yeah. And then my dad was from Bangor in Maine. So okay. It's like a big drinking crack town.
Okay, basically. Big drinking crack town.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Crack daddy.
So like, but let's talk about 9 months. Your mom's like, yo, peace out. You're too crazy, right?
Yeah, like and then, doing ecstasy in the garage and, you know.
What made him come back at 5 because he got sober?
Yeah, he got sober.
I'm sober, I come back. She's like, okay, I'll give you a shot or like.
Well, he got, no. Okay. He didn't come back. He was out. They are still divorced.
Okay, yeah.
Never got back together. He was like, you know, he got Hep C. He was going to die, like the whole thing. And he also had like this like psychiatrist that my mom hated because the psychiatrist was always like, you know, psychiatrists like want to give you medication. And so then they just kept giving him medication and he kept getting worse and the Hep C and like all of that in his liver or whatever. And then he had the shakes and he had to go to a detox and he had, you know, like, and I always imagine like him and like, it just seems so like Bill Wilson, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, you're in the bed and you're just,
you seen that,
sweating.
You seen that when he's all like yeah. In the white beater all sucked up.
Yeah. You're just like, yeah. That's how I imagine it. But yeah, then he got sober and he's been sober ever since. And like, I started, you know, seeing my dad again, having a relationship with my dad again. And then, like going to AA meetings with him. So he would get me on the weekends, you know, custody.
Yeah.
How that works.
Yeah.
And so every weekend I would go to AA meetings.
How old are you?
I was like,
you're the little kid.
I'm the little kid.
You're the little kid. I always wonder, where's that little kid?
I am the little kid. Like, I was the little kid. Like, no, and this is in Marblehead. So it's like this like little place called Little Hall. It's like in this really big building, but like, down, I mean, it's like so AA, but like, it was so different from meetings that I go to now. Like, it was in this like dark brown building and it was like just this one room down a hall and like, it was a little hall. And that's like where my dad got sober. And that's where, I like first learned about AA and it like changed his life. And in turn, it changed my life because I started to have a relationship with my dad and like my mom and my dad are friends now. So like, a lot of things changed for him as soon as he started going to meetings. And yeah, like all of his girlfriends that he dated, like the other one that worked at G, she was also in AA. She had 22 years, you know. So a lot of my, you know, and I have a small family. I'm an only child. Like my mom gave birth to me and then.
Yeah, I'm only child too.
Yeah. Yeah, just like didn't work out. Like they weren't gonna have another one, and he's doing crack, so like there's no chance.
Wait, so your mom's normie?
Or my mom is normie. Yeah,
drinks half a beer, like or doesn't even
drinks like a glass of wine.
One of those people.
She used to drink like wine like every day, but like she started not drinking wine every day. But like I've never seen her drunk. Like literally, I mean, unless like when I was using, I would like force her to get drunk. Maybe only a couple times did she ever let me get her there alongside me. But yeah.
When you're in the meetings as a little kid, what do you think about it in your mind? Like, this is where my dad goes to get better? Or you just thought of it just like as a place you went to, like it was just like some sort of like club?
It was so confusing too, because like that's a really good question. Because like when I go to meetings now, it's like I have this whole, like it's my own experience, you know? But then, I mean, you know, I like had my like iPod and I would like listen to my music, because like obviously like there's some things that people talk about in the rooms that are a little bit not for like a 6 or 7 year old to really understand. But then I would kick it with like all the big homies, like outside in the smoking area, and just like,
Viva, come here.
Yeah. Like chilling, smoking cigarettes. And like, I was like this little kid that would hang out with these like adults. So I was always friends with adults, even on my mom's side, you know, like her friends, like I was always feeling like I was a lot older than I was. Obviously, like not in a crazy way. Just like I could like hang, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So like, when did you come out to California?
I came out in 2017.
Oh, so you're out there for a minute.
Yeah, I came out for CalArts. I went to CalArts to study acting.
Santa Clarita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Santa Clarita. Okay. New Hall, Magic Mountain.
Yeah, Magic Mountain. Yeah, I lived off of Casley Canyon.
Oh, really?
During the fires in 2004, 2003.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It's every summer there's fires up there. Like, yeah. I remember being at school there and we would like be like all drunk on the thing, and then we'd see like this fire in the distance. And
I got a job out there at Volkswagen in Valencia.
Oh, okay.
I was just smoking meth, selling cars.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do when you're selling cars?
Gotta smoke some meth. Get motivated.
Exactly.
I twisted up in the car and I'd sell a car.
Yeah. And then
amazing.
You'd be like, well, I'm going to go smoke some meth now that I sold the car.
But in the end, it burns down. It crashes. Yeah. It only the sustainability of that is nothing.
Yeah. There's no sustainability.
So you moved there. Did you rent a room there? Or did you like, when you came out to...
I started off in the dorms the first year. Because I was just fresh out of high school. And then, yeah, I started off in the dorms, and then I started living in apartments up there with my friends.
So when did you start drinking? First drug, first drink?
First drunk was when I was, honestly, when I was in high school. I always felt like I didn't do it. Like, everyone started doing it, and then I, like, took, like, a couple months.
What year?
I never did anything, like, on time. I was probably, like, 14 or 15.
Freshman?
Yeah, freshman.
Peer pressure? Or, like,
they'll
do it, so I'll give it a shot.
I mean... It was, like, weird. So I was, like, I would smoke weed. Like, I had smoked weed, like, 8 times before I got high. And, like, I just, like, would smoke it, and then nothing would happen to me. And I'd be hanging out with all my older friends, you know, and they'd be smoking weed. They love smoking weed. And it just would never do anything
for
me. 8 times. It took me 8 times. And the only time I got high, the only reason why was because it was at a Halloween party. I think I was a sophomore at this point. And I had had my first drink, but like not memorable. You know what I mean? Like this night was the memorable one, because I had gotten drunk. But before I got drunk enough to realize what was about to happen, I had taken like 2 edibles that I swear were laced with like acid or like.
Who gave them to you?
An older guy in the theater, in like the theater club, you know what I mean?
He supplied
these brownies to all of these like sophomores and freshmen.
And how old was
party.
He? I mean,
I feel like he was like a senior.
That seems kind of sets it up predatory.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like you think about the senior freshman, like, you know,
yeah,
find
I mean,
this.
I know, but it's like I had just assumed that that was what weed was. And like, I mean,
oh,
in
God.
Some ways. So it was my first time getting high, and it was
off an edible, dude.
And I was already drunk, and I was like, I immediately was like, oh, I'm dying, bro. Like, I went up to my friend Sarah and I was like, I'm dying, dude. And I was like, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow. And she was like, you need to fucking calm down. And I was like, I was gone. And I was like hallucinating, threw up on people's shoes. Like, it was immediately like, not like everyone else. You know what I mean?
Smoke 8 times to get high, eat an edible, feel like you're going to die.
Yeah.
What a like 0 to 100.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and I was literally like, oh, I'm going to die. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know what was in that.
Wow.
I feel like there was something else.
So
it didn't seem like it was weed.
After that, you're like, nah, dude, I'm cool with this. Or did you?
No, I continued.
There you go.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to do edibles. So then I just started smoking weed and like fucking hitting the bowl.
Right.
Yeah.
And then after that, did you get high?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then I got high. And then me and my friend Sarah and her older brother, we would, who was graduated from high school at this point. So he was like out of high school. And he would just drive us around. And we would like every like holiday or whatever, I didn't want to be with my mom or parents or whatever. I would just like want to be with them. So I would finish up with my family stuff. And then I'd be like, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. And then we would just like drive around Marblehead like fucking stoned, and I'd be like listening to Radiohead, and I'd be like harmonizing, and I'd be like, this is the best thing in the world. And like, yeah. So then it started getting fun, but I did not do edibles for a really long time.
It always starts off fun.
It always does. Yeah.
Yeah. So just smoking weed, just like sophomore year, freshman year, so drinking a little bit.
Yeah. Drinking a little bit. And then, junior year, one of my like best friends, he was my best friend, and then he became my boyfriend. And he was like the townie alcoholic.
What was his name?
Mitch.
Mitch. Okay.
And like everyone knew that he was an alcoholic. And my dad, at one point, so Mitch came to my play. This was my senior year, and he'd drink like fucking like 25 beers in a couple hours. Like he would just get gone. And so I started to drink, but like I was never like that. So I was like, oh, like, I'm not like that. You know what I mean? Like, so that there was like that otherness in that point. And then like he came to one of my plays because I was still acting. And my dad like went up to him, and my dad is like, what? I think he was like 15 years sober at this point. And he was like, Mitch, it's time to make peace with the bottle.
Verbatim. You're like, this
verbatim.
Way, he's like,
Mitch, it's time to make peace with the bottle.
Viva, this is what you're...
Wow. And then Mitch was like, that was funny. And then, you know, and then actually like a couple of months ago, Mitch called me and he was like, yeah, I finally made peace with the bottle.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I don't know if he still is, but...
So what play was it?
I was King Lear.
Is that the main one?
Yeah.
You're the main one.
I was the main one.
You're not the main. Yeah, awesome.
I was the main one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was cool. It was weird. It was like a bunch of teenagers, you know, doing a Shakespeare play. So yeah. I was like playing an old man, and I was like an 18-year-old girl.
Did you put a beard on? Or like,
no,
okay,
no.
I don't know.
It was kind of like a gender neutral role.
Cool.
Like I wore like a big long cape, and I felt very masculine, but ultimately, because like when everyone's like talking to you, like you're like father, but it was a lot about like, you know, fathers and how they sometimes betray their kids. And like, yeah, it was a very, very special role for me.
I've always known you as an actress.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How do you do that role? Like, I have no idea what acting is. When I see a character in a movie, somehow I get entranced in it. Like, what is your process? Like, how do you get in? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I started off doing Shakespeare when I was 13, and that's how I got into it. And like, I feel like starting off as a kid felt really powerful because it gives you an opportunity to kind of come into your own power, and you're a child and everyone is talking to you like a child, but like then you also have the opportunity to be a little bit more like you're basically given an opportunity to take on this adult role and like talk about these adult themes. That was really important for me because I felt like oftentimes that I wasn't really taken seriously in my emotions and everything. And then when I was acting, I was able to feel like I had ownership and control over what I was.
This person is doing some sort of active skill set, and I'm going to listen and believe this person, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's a little kid's like, oh, this kid's playing this king role. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to take her seriously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
and then,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then I started doing like, I did like some plays like in school, and then I did some plays like in the local theater, and those were really great. And then I started to just feel like, oh, like this is it. Like this is what I need to be doing. I'm really good at this. Like, and I'd never felt so great at something, you know. I always felt like I fell short in a lot of ways for other things, but this was like, I felt really like I had arrived this point in my life where I could really hone in on something that I was uniquely good at. And so then I like applied to schools, and I got into CalArts. That was like the only school that accepted me.
Where'd you apply?
I applied to Juilliard, Carnegie Mellon. I got a call back from Carnegie Mellon, which is pretty legit, but I got waitlisted in NYU, and I got into Bard and then CalArts, and then
CalArts is legit though.
Oh, it's so legit.
It's super legit.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm like I'm super grateful that that was the only BFA program that like accepted me off the bat, because if I'd been accepted at another one, I might have gone there, because I would have like been like, I don't know about CalArts, but like CalArts, I mean, CalArts changed my life.
How so?
Oh my God. I mean, my drinking took off there.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go. Okay.
Like yeah. It, I mean, everything changed there. You know, I get there and like, I felt like I could finally be myself. My school that I grew up in high school, like I didn't really feel very at one with the people there. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way. Like that's a pretty normal high school experience. But I always felt like I wasn't surrounded by like people that felt like my people, you know what I mean? Except for my one bestie, Annabelle, who I'm still friends with today. She's the best. But yeah, like I came to CalArts and then all of a sudden I was surrounded by all these artists and it was just like so amazing and cool. And there were these people that like wanted to hang out with me and like wanted to be my friend. And I was like, and I felt like not necessarily like popular, but I felt like I was part of something. And, you know, we started drinking and I started like eventually, you know, going on a ton of Tinder dates and like fucking like 38-year-old dudes when I was 18, like all like once every day, like taking off in like different ways that I'd never been able to, and like and then you know doing Molly at Drag Ball, and like
what's that?
Drag Ball is this event like that happens at CalArts. So there's two really big school parties at CalArts. It's Halloween and then Drag Ball, and Drag Ball like everyone does Molly, and like Halloween everyone does Molly too, but like Drag Ball it's like a big deal, like everyone dresses like in these crazy ornate outfits, and you know you just get really fucked up basically. But I just I mean that was interesting, and then I started to feel like I had friends and like I had these people that like wanted to be around me.
I think
and, like,
you did, because you really did.
I did.
You know?
Yeah. And that was a new feeling for me, because I always felt like there was a lot of reasons in high school that I didn't feel very wanted around.
Is a theater nerd a real thing?
Yes.
Like, okay. So you were a theater nerd.
Yeah.
I love it. That's
but
so,
I was kind of like, I'm. It's like cool. I wasn't like I'm like not a theater kid. Like I don't do
musicals. Yeah, theater
musicals.
Kid. That's what I meant to say.
I don't do musicals. But like I did do like one musical, and I had a lot of fun. Musicals are so fun. I wish that I did musicals, but I was too proud.
When you get into CalArts or Supply, what are you displaying? Saying this is why I should get in. Like what's on your resume when you send it to them?
I mean, basically, part of that is getting is doing an audition.
Yeah.
And the audition they offered me admittance. So I go to New York. I mean, I submit my application and everything, but CalArts, like, and most of these, like, theater schools, like, they don't really care about, I mean, they do care about your grades and everything. And, like, I had okay grades, but it's really the audition. And so when I went to my audition, it was in New York, and I, like, went there, did my monologue. And,
what was the monologue? What was it?
I did a monologue from, I had three monologues, I think. I did one from Titus Andronicus, Lavinia, which is, in Titus Andronicus, like, it's like a revenge play, basically. And it's these two people that are just trying to fuck with each other immensely. And I played the daughter of Titus Andronicus. And the woman opposite him, like, who's trying to get back at me, like, at my dad, ends up, setting her sons on me to like rape me, mutilate me, and like cut off all my limbs and my tongue. And that's what happens to Lavinia. So the monologue I did was basically pleading for her to not do this right before she does it.
Do they get you on the spot, or do they, or do they tell you beforehand, this is what you're going to do?
Like basically it's right before, it's like the last plea for her life.
I mean, like when you show up, they're like, hey, this is what you're going to do.
Oh, no. I planned it.
Oh,
I planned
that's a lot. I'm
No. They're like, they're basically like, prepare two monologues and an extra one just in case.
Okay.
And if you get to do the extra one just in case, that's normally a good sign.
Yeah.
So I did three. So I did the Lavinia, Titus Andronicus. I did one from, that was called The Starlet, which is from a play called Hotel Nepenthe by John Kuntz. And it was basically like a Hollywood lady that like goes to a party and she like feels so desired by everyone. And, but she also is like kind of like afraid of like that fleeting fame that she feels in this moment. It's really beautiful. And then the third one I did from Stone Cold Dead Serious by Adam Rapp, which is like one of my favorite plays of all time. And it's about this guy. You'd really like it. It's about this kid named Wynn and his sister Shaylee, and they live in Chicago, and like Shaylee is like a prostitute at 16, and like he is like a boy genius in this video game.
Harakiri.
What do you call that?
What is that?
You know, like the type of
thing. Oh, Bushido.
Bushido.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bushido blade. Right?
Yeah.
Is that what's called?
No, that's the blade.
That's the blade.
But the
I'm not Japanese. I'm Chinese.
No, I know. I'm just like, what is it? But anyway, that's part of the play, but it's like very dark ending. And I did that as my third one. But yeah, then they were like, okay, we're going to give you our card. We want you to come out and tour the place. And I came out and toured. And I was like.
So like, okay, so we're in CalArts, right?
Yeah, we were in CalArts.
Is that a 2-year school?
Four-year school. Yeah. Okay. So then my second year happens. I start smoking a lot of weed every day. I start drinking a bit more. There are these things called gallery nights every Thursday where we would just get blackout drunk at, and it was so much fun. And then I got a boyfriend named Augie.
Doggy, yeah, like a doggy.
No, Augie.
Augie, sorry. I'm like, what? Okay.
Doggy.
I'm like, yo, whatever.
Actually, in the Chinese zodiac, he was the year of the water dog.
Really?
Yeah, 1994.
Okay. Augie.
Yeah. So he was in the photo program, and wouldn't you know, he had 3 years sober, or 2.5 years sober.
Program.
And he, like, it was another situation where I saw him and I was like, oh my God, who is that? And like, I fell in love with him. I was like, oh my God, I need you. Yeah. You're going to be mine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm good at getting what I want most of the time. So like, I got him.
You got him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, hey. And then we hung out. Our first time hanging out was on his birthday in 2019 on February 17th. And we just started dating immediately. And then like we dated for a year. It was really tumultuous in the fact that his mental health was like deteriorating at a rapid rate.
From what?
Mostly depression. Mm. And in 2020, you know, he got his 3 years on February 3rd, and then it was our 1-year anniversary on February 17th. And then 10 days later, he killed himself, and I found his body and drove down to LA. It was like, where are you? Like, I need to find you. Like, he texted me like, I love you, baby. I'm so sorry. And then I was like calling his dad. I was calling everyone being like, have you heard from him? I'm a little worried. And it had been 24 hours. And then once it hit the 24-hour mark and no one had heard from him, I was like, I'm going down there. And I was in a play at the time called Oedipus. I don't know if you know about the story of Oedipus, where he fucks his mom, you know?
That sounds interesting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Oedipus complex when the son is in love with the mom.
Oh, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That's like the idea. But then there's an ancient Greek play about Oedipus. And Oedipus was all about like the plague. And it's just so weird, like these things that we do, like our art imitating life. Like it was about the plague and about people dying, and then the mother kills herself, and Augie came to see that show, and then like 4 days later he was like, he drove down, actually the next day after seeing my play, he drove down to Mexico, told everyone that he was just going to take photos, and then told like all of his friends, that's what he told me, that we were going to take photos. And then he told all of his friends that he was going to go buy medicine for my sick aunt. And then he like just drove down there, and I guess he like bought this drug that starts with an M. I forget what it's called. It was on the autopsy, but it's a drug that they sell down there to put dogs down and like put doggy animals down. And so then he came back to LA and he took it and he wrote a note. And then I drove down to LA. I was in the play. I was like, I went to my director. I was like, I gotta go. Like, I think my boyfriend killed himself. And he was like, whoa, okay, go take care of it. I'm sure. And everyone was like, I'm sure it's fine. Like, I'm sure this isn't the case. And I'm like, dude, when you know, you know. Like, I have prophetic dreams all the time. Like, it's crazy. 2 weeks before he killed himself, I had a dream that I was climbing over trash, like, cars and body bags trying to climb up to get to him, but I was at my dad's old crack house. So it was just like, I don't know. But yeah, and then he killed himself, and then I found his body. It was really dark. It was really, you know, grotesque. And I found out the next day he was cheating on me for half of our relationship with this other girl. And then immediately I was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to do it. And then I just like started drinking like no one's business. 2 weeks off. And then then lockdown happened. And then I was like off to the races immediately. And then I was like, yeah, that's a lot. Sorry.
No, it's, yeah. What did the letter say?
There was 4 pages. And the first 2 pages were for his friends and family, basically saying like, don't think of me as a martyr. The world is going downhill, you know, like really depressing things. And like saying to his graffiti crew, like write my name up big and all that. And to his friends and his parents to like not feel bad and not blame themselves. And then the 3rd page was to her, which I never read because I'm a gangster like that. I'm not going to read a note that he left for someone who wasn't me because it wasn't meant for me. And then the 4th page was for me. And it was like, he called me Habibi. So it was like, Habibi, you're a beautiful beam of shining light. You're like the most beautiful thing I've ever come across. I forget it now. I used to know it by heart, but I haven't looked at it in a while. It kind of just is a dark time. But he basically just said, like, you kept me from doing this way sooner than I would have. And like, I love you.
Half the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Program?
Someone at CalArts.
Okay. Did you figure out who it was?
Mm-hmm. The next day after, I had to notify the school and tell everyone that basically that Augie killed himself. He's dead. And I like called one of his friends called me and he was like, what's going on? Like they sent out an email saying that someone had passed away. And then I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. It's Augie. He killed himself. And then the friend in question, his phone got snatched out of his hand. And then she was on the call. And then she was like, hello, was he in his bed? And I was like, yes. Were you two sleeping together? He was like, yeah.
Did she know you?
Yeah. She said she didn't, but she did. Everyone knew.
You for know, sure.
Everyone's on Instagram.
What's it like right when you get the phone, you hear her voice? Did you know that it was her? Or just because she got the phone like that, you knew it was her?
Just, she was like, I mean, I can't remember if she said who it was, but I could tell.
Just
could
by tell. The interaction without saying anything, like someone grabs the phone, hey, you know?
Yeah. And I knew, like a month before that whole thing happened, someone had told me that he was cheating on me. And like, I was really drunk when I found out. So like, I just called him. And if you find out someone's like cheating on you, never call them because they can lie really easily over the phone, especially when you're fine. So I was like, did you do this? He was like, no, I would never do that. I was like, do you swear? He's like, yes, I swear. I swear in my mother's grave, like all this stuff. But yeah. And then I hated him and I hated her. And I was like writing in my journal, like drunk when I was at home. Because I went back to Boston right after because lockdown. And then lockdown happened.
Oh, wow. That was March, right?
2020.
March 2020, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you went back to Boston. You're like, because like school shut down. So in your school, you got to be in front of people. You just can't do a Zoom.
But
like,
we did do Zoom.
Really?
Yeah, we did Zoom. Talk about,
how do you do acting over? I mean,
Zoom? Was like, I mean, I was gone, dude. Yeah, I was like, you know, like I was in such immense grief that I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
And I would just go to my classes and I'd be like, you know.
Yeah.
But I would like make like little videos and stuff for like my movement classes. And like, it was a lot about my like making movies. It became very digital. Yeah. But then I started like drinking all the time. I was always drunk. Never was sober. Smoked weed all day, every day. And I started, you know, it was just crazy. I like lockdown happened and then immediately I was like, I was hanging out with a bunch of people. We were all getting fucked up. And then I was like, let's have an orgy. And I was in lockdown, like having an orgy.
And they were like,
it was like 8, 9, 10 people.
But they were like, cool. Like, everyone did. Oh, wow.
No, I mean, it was so bad. Like I was like blackout drunk, you know, and I was like, we're doing the orgy. Yeah. And then like the chick whose house we were doing the orgy at, like she like came out and she was like, are you guys seriously having orgy right now? And we were like,
In COVID.
Yeah, in COVID.
Awesome. How reckless.
It was so reckless. And then I was like getting like, you know, fondled by the guy. And then, and then she kept like opening the door and being like, are you guys seriously having an orgy right now in my house without me? And then I was like, I was like on the bed and I was like, I started to cry. I was so blacked out. Oh my God. I started to cry. I was like, oh, I felt so bad for her because no one was like, come join us in the orgy.
Why not?
No one wanted her in the orgy.
I understand.
Yeah.
Say
no more.
Yeah.
No one wanted her in the orgy. And I felt so bad for her that I ended up fisting her at the end of the night.
Oh. Did she feel better about it?
I'm sure she did. Yeah. I fucking projectile vomited in her mom's bathroom and I stole one of her mom's shirts.
What shirt did you steal?
Well, some bitch stole my favorite Metro VinFin hoodie from Boston that my other ex had given me. So then I was like, fuck you guys, I'm taking this Lululemon shirt.
Yeah. Does Augie's like, does his passing affect how you feel today with relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the trust thing or is it something?
I mean, it's mostly, yeah. I mean, for a really long time, I had no trust. And I started becoming crazy. Like I would get in relationships and I'd be like looking through their phone. And I'd never done that before. Like I'd never been that bitch.
New behaviors,
totally. Looking through their phone, looking through their DMs, like all these things that I never would have done.
It's trauma.
Yeah.
It's real trauma.
Yeah. And then, you know, there was like certain things, like people would just, if people started to get distant from me, like friends or like lovers, if they started to like push me away, I'd be like, are you about to kill yourself? Like, you know, it's just like my brain goes there and like, it's a very isolating experience to have because not a lot of people, especially like people my age, I think have gone through. You know, your partner killing themselves and then finding the body and then they're cheating on you and then lockdown, you're totally isolated.
I've seen just like randomly, just like on social media, you post something, but it's very vague.
Yeah.
About
Augie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I was going to just DM. That's a very intense thing to DM about. I was like, oh, there's probably something really bad happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's only like 3 years, you know, 2019,
four years.
Yeah. 4 years.
Yeah.
Still kind of. I mean, still.
Oh, definitely. And I'm not in therapy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not in therapy.
Do you think you would get benefit or you just, no?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. Yeah. Who doesn't get benefited from therapy? But I'm okay. You know, like I'm not trying to say like, you know, people shouldn't do therapy. Like that's not at all. I'm sure it would be great for me if I did it. Like whatever. I just, sometimes I feel like I honor myself and those things that I've been through by kind of just going through them with myself, you know, going through those motions internal and like, I don't know, but also like getting a therapist is hard. Like I do have depression. Like I take Prozac, like it's hard for me to like get down and like, it's hard for me to like make an OBGYN appointment. Like I don't do well with like adult situations like that.
Yeah.
Like a therapist is definitely one of them for me where I'm just like, oh my God, like, $100 a session to talk to someone?
Yeah.
Hell no.
I mean, but you went to the dentist. Remember you said you had like 10 cavities? You like look at the pictures?
Dude, I got fucking shanghaied.
No, oh don't shoot. Fuck
oh
that guy.
Oh my God, dude.
Oh, tell me about it.
I had no cavities. He lied. He was a Groupon.
Oh, man.
He was a Groupon.
It sounded kind of suspect. I'm like,
yeah.
It did look great.
I know. I
it
have great
teeth. Bomb as fuck, for real.
I know.
Look,
my
super...
dad, he's a crack addict, yeah. But he was a crack addict.
Yeah.
He is the reason why I have such great teeth.
Your teeth are legit.
Because he's like obsessed with my teeth.
Your teeth are, that's
like,
what...
he would like email me like emails being like, did you floss today? Yeah. like highlighted in red, like things like your teeth are your prized possessions. Or, yeah.
Well, because I remember you said North Hollywood. And then you said you look at the like monitor and showed you the. I'm like, this sounds like a total like, this is not professional at all.
No, dude, it wasn't. And I got there and I was like, there's just like people walking in. Like it was, I bit the bullet. I fucked up.
Did he fuck your teeth up?
I don't know.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to. I mean,
he just drilled on them.
Fucking motherfucker, dude.
Seven fillings. And no, I swear to God, dude. I didn't have cavities. So I don't even know. But yeah,
Do you feel okay now?
Yeah, but they hurt for a while.
Oh, my fucking... This piece
I mean,
of shit, dude.
I know.
Oh my God. What's his name?
I don't know.
Fuck that guy. Groupon, dude? Fuck you, dude.
MK? I don't know.
Dude, Groupon, North Hollywood, dude?
I can't. I know.
That's so...
I'm so sad, but I need to accept it.
Cool. Yeah, we gotta, like...
I did it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I am so gullible. Like, you tell me that I have, like, eight cavities, I'll be like, oh my, like, I'm my father's daughter. Like, I listen to people, and especially when it comes to my teeth, I started freaking out, and I was like, oh my God, I need to get this done, dealt with ASAP.
Yeah.
And he was like, come in next week. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I remember you said that. I was just like, this isn't, your teeth look legit. I mean, that sounds whatever, but if the dentist seems, there's a good dentist, and then now we come to the truth here.
Yeah, we came to the truth. I mean, you know, it's okay.
So then.
My teeth are still great, you know?
Yeah, for sure. As long as you're not in pain, it's cool.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Did you ever, you know, just like ghost him, right? What are you going to say to a dude? Hey, dude, you fucked my teeth up, right? What are you really going to say to a guy like that, right? Or did you call him?
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I kind of realized like a couple weeks after he'd done it that I was like, no. And I had heard from other people being like, don't go to a Groupon. But I heard from one person that I used to drink with to go to a Groupon because like you can get a teeth cleaning, but that's how they get you. They give you the free teeth cleaning and then they convince you that your teeth are all fucked up when they're not.
Yeah. So lesson of the day, no Groupon
dentist. Do not Groupon your dentist.
Do not Groupon your dentist.
No, you need to really consider all of the aspects of dentistry and that it is a very noble profession when done right.
Yeah, definitely. Nothing's like there's nothing worse than cheap. The most expensive thing you can buy is cheap.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
So like, you were out in Boston then on the Zoom for...
Yes, for the Zoom.
So then did you hit a bottom to come out here or like what was the thing that brought you back to LA again?
I mean, I still had my apartment out there. So I just like, you know, was getting those stimmy checks and I was like, okay, like all my friends were going back to LA to do it. And I went back to LA. It was my last year of school. And I just went back.
Did you ever do it in person again? For your...
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so we ended on Zoom.
Okay.
We did like some filming things and yeah, I mean, it was like, I felt like, you know, I developed a couple of like a relationship with someone and then I was like living with him and then I just started doing like, I had this friend in New York. I mean, Shahar and I would hang out whenever I was back in Boston and we would just do so much ketamine and coke and... Or Klonopin. Yeah. And then she would mail me her gabapentin prescription. So I started abusing those.
How much would you take?
I don't know. Like she like would be like, yeah, just take however many you want. It's fine. And I would take like 7 or 8 a day.
300 milligram?
I don't even remember, dude. I didn't look.
How'd it make you feel?
Really fucking good.
Yeah. Did you drink on it too?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Of course I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smoked weed.
Yeah.
Did shrooms.
What about mushrooms?
Oh my God, I loved mushrooms.
Really?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Do you know your first mushrooms experience?
Yeah.
Can you remember it? Let's talk about it.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Well, okay. Okay, first mushrooms experience. Okay, I'm like, I did them so much. Like, I forget like the first mushrooms experience. But like, was that the first time? I think it was like the first time that I ever got like really like I saw God, like was in Santa Clarita. It was during it was in 2020 and what did I do? Yeah, we just like fucking...
How did it start? Like, hey, you want to do mushrooms today? Or you're like...
No, we were doing so many drugs. Like we were doing mushrooms like a couple times a week.
Okay.
Like me and my boyfriend at the time, you know, we would like we loved mushrooms. We loved, you know, so we would just do that all the time. Like we would just take mushrooms and then we'd go on walks in Santa Clarita at night. And, so we would like walk through the desert and like just like look up at the stars. And then I would just start like, I mean, me as a person already, I'm like so like expressive.
Yes.
When I was on, yeah, when I was on mushrooms, it was like, it was next level, dog. I was like, I would like look up and like my body would get way too heavy to even hold myself up. So I'd be like, and then I'd like fall to the ground and be like, it's so beautiful, like, and I'd just like be like gawking at the sky, and then I would I saw God, and I was like, oh my God, like it's okay,
yeah,
everyone's gonna die, we're fine.
Is it more of a body high for you than visual?
Yeah,
that's mushrooms for me was more body high.
It's a body high, but it's also like I would feel my body in space in a different way too. I guess that is a body high, but like it was. Like I would like see myself in this little cartoon form and like, you know, I would like I just felt so creative on mushrooms. Like I would see things in just such a unique way, and that felt really good. So mushrooms always felt really good for me. I never really had a bad trip. I mean, there were some times where I would be like, oh my God, I'm a little demon, you know,
like a happy little demon.
Yeah. Like it was with my boyfriend. That's the same boyfriend. We would do mushrooms all the time. And we were house sitting for his friend. And we were just like, it was like our little drug den. Like we were just doing mushrooms all day and like smoking weed and drinking. And we were tripping with our friends that we would normally trip with. They would just come over and we started tripping. And then I was like seeing myself in this new light. I was like, oh my God, like I'm this little demon girl. I'm living in the inferno and I'm going to be screaming into Jeff Bezos' face for all of eternity. And that's my afterlife.
Did it make you feel good?
Yes, because at the time, I was like, that's what I was drawn to. I was drawn to this diabolical feeling. It was like, I call it a diabolical fever. It was like all over me. That was like what my using felt like. I was so obsessed with these dark aspects of myself. Like I became in love with the shadow. You know, I feel like with Augie dying in that way, a lot of my drinking and using afterwards really was like, informed by that, and like I sought out death because that was the last thing I saw of my lover, you know what I mean? And so I felt like I was chasing this constantly, like trying to just get to this next mode of existence and like dying. And you know, so I drank a lot of kratom and would, you know, feel like I was gonna pass out, and it felt great. And that was like, that was more like towards the end though, in 2022.
Yeah, sobriety date, what?
March 13th, 2022.
That is amazing. I mean, Augie seems like a huge, like, part of your life.
He is. In life and in death, he was. He was so special.
Why? Tell me about him.
I mean, he just saw things in a very unique way. You know, he showed me so much. He taught me so much about art.
Tell me one thing.
He would, like, take pictures of things on his... He loved taking pictures on his iPhone. And he was obsessed with, like, the Odyssey. And like one of his last works of art that he made was about the Odyssey and about like how the generations of men that came before him all went to war. And so that men were able to like, I guess, or had to experience this really traumatizing thing, like going to war. And then his generation didn't. And so then you're inheriting this like almost like toxic masculinity about a man is supposed to do and what he's supposed to do for his country and what he's supposed to do for his family and like all these things. I mean, he just was so curious about things and about the way that the world worked. And I mean, he would take like pictures on his iPhone all the time, like zoomed in. He got like the zoom in thingy, and he would take pictures of things that like I would never think to take pictures of. And like, he wasn't afraid of like gross things. Like he made me fall in love with Los Angeles. He was the reason I love LA. Like, he really showed me everything about L.A. that made me love it and then made me hate it when he died. And then now I feel like I can love it all again, which is really nice to feel close to that part of his spirit.
How old was he?
He was 26.
Okay, cool.
He died on the 26th of February on his 26th birthday.
That's...
10 days after his 26th birthday.
I mean, Augie sounds like somebody that loved photos.
He was a photographer and he started painting. And he was like, he loved like the phrase, like anyone can cook with art specifically, like anyone can make a painting. Like it doesn't need to be looking like Michelangelo's work in order for it to be good. And he really showed me that. Like I started drawing because of him. And now I like make paintings and like make art. And like, it's all because he showed me that I could, even if I didn't have these like skill sets that I thought were like the baseline of what you need to make art.
I see your art.
Yeah.
I thought there were tadpoles. I thought that it was sperm. I mean, like, I thought what...
Those are axolotl eggs.
What is it actually?
Axolotl eggs.
Oh, they're little eggs.
They're eggs of, like, tadpole eggs.
Tadpoles. But, so I got it right.
They're not tadpoles because they're not frogs. Frogs are tadpoles.
Okay, thank you.
Tadpoles are frogs. About to be frogs.
Yeah.
Axolotl eggs. So if you think of, like, Finding Nemo, you know, in the beginning when all the little eggs... The fish eggs.
Yeah.
They're fish eggs, basically. Yeah. Axolotl eggs. But that's one painting I'm working on, and I just started learning how to oil paint, so that's been like fun for me.
With Augie's thing, did you have any, if thinking back, because you think any signs?
Oh my God, yes.
Let's talk
so
about
many
it.
Signs. For one, the movie Lords of Chaos, example. We were watching, he was so interested. And so we were watching like all of these documentaries and movies about people killing themselves. Like I Love You Now Die, which is about that Massachusetts couple, the teenagers. And she's like telling the boyfriend to kill himself. We watched that. We watched the Kurt Cobain documentary. And then we watched Lords of Chaos, which like everyone fucking commits.
Yes, you watched it.
What do you mean?
Then you watched Lords of Chaos.
Yeah, basically.
That's what I know so much about. Okay, go.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what that's why I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting. Cause like this was, he's such a big part of my story. And then Lords of Chaos is such a big part of like that last final time. And like looking back, like all the signs, because, you know, we would be watching these movies where these people were like taking a shotgun to their head and like blowing their brains out. And like, I would be like, ooh. And he'd just be like.
Neutral?
Like just really observing it and like really fascinated with it. He was really fascinated with like the romantic aspect of killing yourself because like you can't go on, you can't live anymore. And it was just like so sad. But I mean, yeah, that's like where your brain goes when you're in that place though. You're just in such a dark place. It's one of the darkest places that a human mind can ever go.
Do you think you might have had guilt that he was cheating on you?
100%. Yeah. But I don't think that was the sole reason.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, I feel like that was something in him, you know, because he was an alcoholic. He was also saying to me that he couldn't imagine being sober for the rest of his life. So, and that was towards the end. So it's like, as soon as you start saying statements like that, it's kind of like a red flag because it's like, you know, the whole point is that we're alcoholics. Like we can't stay sober for 50 years unless we take it day by day and we're only able to focus on right now and not picking up right now. And like think future tripping and everything is just like proof that you're not living in the present and you're not able to like fully allow yourself to experience this present moment and the discomfort of what it means to be an alcoholic and not being able to pick up and drink like everyone else.
Is there anything that like when you saw the signs, did he have anything that you like talked about, are you all right? And he would just be like, yeah, I'm cool. Or you didn't even talk about it with him. You just observed it.
No, yeah, we would talk about it. I mean, I like, it was weird. Like my family came out to visit and to see my play and we were all having dinner and somehow got brought up. And this was 3 days before Augie killed himself. So he had already gone to Mexico to get the medicine. And he got brought up and then, you know, Augie said something like, and we were at a table and my dad was there. Everyone was there. And Augie was like, yeah, well, you know, they say to value your life, not on your years, but how you lived it. And then my dad was like, well, yeah, but it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. You can never get your life back once you do that. That kind of silenced Augie. You know, he would talk about how he was depressed and he seemed like he was depressed, but I was so drunk.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, drunk and like doing Molly and Molly come downs and everything. Like I wasn't able to really understand and be there for him. But I also don't think that we were very compatible. Like we weren't very well matched. We just kind of like were together because we like it's so weird that him and I dated for a year because we really weren't compatible in this way. He was so secretive about his life. And I feel like, I mean, I truly feel like I was meant to stay there with him for that whole year in order for me to be there with him at the end, you know, be the last person to have an interaction with his body in that way. And like, you know, I'm really close with his family, like his mom and his dad. And
still, hell yeah.
Yeah. That's no, we talk. Yeah. This past February was really hard. And, you know, like, because February was always like really, really hard for me after. So it's just interesting, like March 13th, like right after the hellscape that is February, the month of February, I was like brought to my knees and I got sober that year on 2022, March.
Pain is a great motivator.
It is. It is. Yeah.
Was there anything really depressed about his life or is it seriously just like a overall generic depression?
I think it's like, yeah, he was just, there was a screw loose, you know? I feel like it's a genetic thing
genetic
almost,
thing.
You know?
Because from what you're telling me, it seems like his life was good in general.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have great lives and not a lot of people can handle it either way.
Yeah.
You know? And he was one of those people that just like never really felt fulfilled in that.
So what's going on now?
Now I'm 2 years sober and I'm like acting again. A lot of that time prior to me getting sober, I was working at E-Rustic Inn. Which is a bar in Los Feliz, which is like where you go to die. Okay. Where an alcoholic goes to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like drinking really, really heavily at this point. Like, and I was like really small. Like I was 130 pounds and like, or like, no, I was 115 pounds or something. I like weighed the same amount that I did in seventh grade. And like my hair was falling out. My skin was yellow. I would drink Kratom shots and like drink Kratom all day and then take a shot of Jameson before I left the house and then just drink all day and then do lots of ketamine and like go to the moon. And then there was this one time that I was at a bar, my friend Rachel, and we were at Akbar and I was like on the dance floor and we had just done so much ketamine and I was like on the moon. And then I like, I was so disconnected from my body that I didn't understand, but I felt like something was coming out of me, but I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I figured it out the next day that I was puking into my hands on the dance floor, putting it in a cup, someone's drink, because I just couldn't understand that something was coming out of me. Then I puked and then I thought I was going to die that night. I was literally like ODing and then fell asleep. And then I actually saw Rachel recently and she's still doing the same thing. And it's like, I mean, yeah, now I'm not living like that anymore, obviously, but I'm always constantly reminded because LA is such a small little community, you know, when you get to know everyone. And like, I feel like I run into people all the time from like that part of my life where like I have all these people that like I was friends with right before I got sober. And like now they're trying to get sober. And it's just amazing. It's amazing. I love it.
When they see you, they're like, what?
Yeah.
You're sober?
Yeah.
They're like, you?
I mean, a lot. I really isolated myself. Like a lot of people didn't really know that I was that bad, you know, because some people, my mom did, my best friend Annabelle did, you know, like people that were, I let be really close to me were, but I mostly surrounded myself with lower companions. Yeah. So
when you said mom, that sounded Boston.
Sorry. My mom.
Yeah.
My mom.
Yeah.
Is my upstairs.
How do you find out about this area? You know, like recovery, all this stuff around here.
Oh, well.
Pathfinder is a little small thing.
Yeah, I know. Basically, right up before I got sober, so I was working at Eurestican. The day I got sober, I quit that job. But prior to that, my dad had been calling me, telling me to go to young people's meetings in AA, because there were so many. And I was like, no, I don't think it's that. Like, I'm good. And I started, like, I was like, I feel like it's my antidepressants that is making me feel so awful. So I, like, went off Prozac and just was, like, doing a ton of drugs and, you know, feeling like shit. And then I obviously was brought to my knees and then I got sober and I like told my dad, I was like, I'm done. Like I had this really spiritual experience the night that I got sober where I like came home from a night of doing like ketamine and Kratom, my witch's brew and Coke. I think I did a little MDMA that night too. Alcohol, weed. And I just came home and I was like clutching my pillow. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm going to die. Like, I'm going to die like this. Like, and I was actually talking to someone recently and they were like, you know, like when you feel that way, it's kind of like your body is literally sending signals to your brain when you're feeling this way, being like, we cannot go on like this. We will die. Like, I'm dying. Please help me.
Yeah.
And that's how it felt. And I had a spiritual experience. Like my God, I was pushing my head in the toilet for so long. This is how I describe it. Like, I just was, like, giving myself a little swirly. And then God, like, pulled my head out of the toilet and was like, you're done. And then I was done. And then I went to a meeting the next day. And I, like, told my friend who worked at Eurestican with me. And she was like, well, you know, Fallon is sober. And I was like,
what's up, Fallon?
Fallon was one of the people that I did a lot of drugs with when we went to CalArts together. Like, we had a threesome. We did Molly. Yeah. Yeah. We would
party. I love Fallon.
I love Fallon, too.
Yeah. I was going to bring her up, but then that, now you brought her up. She's rad.
She's so
rad. I didn't
want
to divert, but because, like, you might have said, oh, I don't know her, but you, oh, yeah.
No. I love Fallon. Yeah, so that was, great. Yeah. We were really close my first year of CalArts. And then Laura was like, Fallon's sober. Like, you should hit her up. And so I texted Fallon, and she brought me to Wednesday Brunswick. And I was, like, shaking in the corner with, like, a bag of Coke in my bag, being like, oh, I can't do this. And then I just started going around. And then I thought that everyone went to one meeting a week.
Yeah, that so ignorant type.
You're just know, like, yeah. I'm just like, there's only one meeting and you all go here in all of Los Angeles. It's at the Silver Lake Community Church and it's at 7:30 p.m. And that's where everyone goes. There's only one.
Like therapy. I see my psychiatrist once.
Yeah, like I didn't. And so for months I thought that. I thought that like you guys were all just like going to the one meeting a week. And then I started finding out like, oh, like there's other meetings. And so then people started bringing me to other meetings. And like mostly like I just would, you know, like find someone that like I was like chill with. Like Fallon would bring me around. And then I forget how I ended up going to Pathfinders. I wonder if it was Bella.
Bella? Rest in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P. Bella.
The homie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was my best friend. My first, like, when I got sober, my first best friend. Was at this point, I think I had, we became friends in July, actually. July of 2022. So I had, like, 4 months sober or something. And I met her. And, like, when we first met each other, like, we didn't really like each other. We were kind of both like, she's a Virgo. I'm an Aquarius. Like, no. And then we started, like, we were like, wait, we really get along. And I was like, dude, like, I like really like you. And she was like, I really like you too. Like, and I was like, isn't that weird? And she was like, yeah, like it didn't make sense, but it did. Like we were like so close and then we would hang out every day. And then I'm pretty sure that's how I went and ended up going to Pathfinders. And then,
yeah, Bella was a stable. Hell yeah.
She was the best.
Yeah. She was awesome for sure. I remember she got a year and I went to Trader Joe's, a total platonic thing. I bought her flowers, and she said, she told me, no one's ever bought me flowers before.
Oh, yeah.
You serious? She's like, yeah, no one's ever bought me flowers. I'm like, that's so fuck. I was like, well, then these are for you then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. So sweet.
So, like, yeah, you sound great. Heard you on Monday. Yeah. Sound good.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. I feel my life is so good now, and I know that when I was new— and when I was like feeling like there was no hope for me, I would hear people say that. And like, it's just like, it's like so cliche. Like it is cliche. Like this really does work. Like being sober really does make your life better. Like if you're really going through it, being sober is the thing to do. And I mean, I just feel like my life is getting so big now. Like Valerie's moving in with me.
No way.
Yes.
I saw that post. No way.
Valerie's
So mid-city to
Hollywood Hills, baby.
Hell yeah. What's up, Valerie?
Valerie.
I love her. She's so sweet. She's awesome.
I know. I'm so excited to live with her.
Yeah.
So she's actually moving in 10 days. So we're like, that's another thing too. Like things change for me so drastically all at once. And then I'll get like a couple months of stability. And then God is just like, no, more change. And like, I can handle it now. And that's really, really impressive. And if you knew me then, like, it's like I would cut my finger cutting a slice of bread and that would ruin my day. And I'd be like, why would God do this to me? Like, you know, like so deranged. But now I'm like, God, like the other week, right before I got my 2 years, I cut my finger.
What'd you say?
And I was like, oh my God, I cut my finger.
That's right.
It was a spiritual experience. I was like, oh my God. This is not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, like, I've just been going through a lot of stressful situations with my living situation, like, for the past year. And it's never the end of the world, even though it feels like it sometimes. And, like, I'm just, like, so proud of myself. And, like, I'm so proud of you for coming back. And, like all these people that, like, I'm, you know.
I feel a lot of shame.
Yeah.
I was on ChatGPT last night. Now I'm having a conversation with ChatGPT. I'm like, should I feel like I'm a loser and not real that I relapsed? And it gave me this super long, really awesome answer.
I'm sure it did.
And I'm like, well, it's like, yeah. What, so that me sharing about it, like it, the answer ChatGPT gave me made me feel really good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I went out. Yeah. Self-pity consumed me. Yeah. I broke up with a girl. Yeah. MS was kicking my ass. Yeah. You know?
All that is true.
And then, you know, and the thing is like me coming back, it's like from ChatGPT, it's like, you can maybe help someone else that, like, you know what I'm saying? Sharing that.
Nothing happens in God's world by mistake.
For sure, yeah.
Also, like, yeah, you went out. Yeah, you're still alive.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fucking miracle.
Yeah.
It's rare that people go out these days and they come back and they're fine.
For sure.
So, like, you know.
2 weeks.
Well, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Is a long time. A lot can happen in 2 weeks.
I know.
It's like, really, yeah, I'm so glad you're okay. I remember when it was, like, on the low, you know, that you went out. And Annie told me, and I was like, everyone was like, no, no.
No, really?
Like, because like you're such a staple of AA to me, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're awesome. Yeah. And like you, no one wants to see you go and die. No one wants to see it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I relate to your bottom. The last day you used, you're like, you had to hit some sort of like physical thing to mm-hmm. happen to you. Like, I think God gave me MS because mm. like he knew I would go all the way if I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used, I could only use for a week or two before all my faculties stopped working. My hands stopped working. My eyes stopped working. My legs stopped working. So it's like, I think God's like, yo, dude, you're dope as fuck, dude. Like, I can't see you being 60 years old on Skid Row. Mm-mm. You know what I'm saying?
No.
I'm going to give you this because I think you can handle it. You got to really believe in me. You know what I'm saying? You got to really know that, like I've chosen you. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, that's a very wise,
you know,
approach to having MS.
Yeah.
I mean, that's beautiful that you are able to, like, communicate with God in this way and be like, you know what? Like, yeah, you're right. Like, I can handle this.
Yeah. So that's great. I mean, like, yeah, I used to think it was every day I live my life, I don't think about it.
Mm.
You know, yeah. I live my life as if, but coming back now, it's been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
The ego, the fear.
Well, you're a newcomer again.
Yeah.
And it sucks being a newcomer.
Yeah.
It's like the worst feeling.
It's the worst feeling.
The worst feeling ever.
The worst feeling ever.
I feel so much shame.
Yeah.
And like, but I haven't relapsed, you know, and when I started coming in and then I was like, I'm in, whatever. I haven't relapsed. It still felt awful. You know what I mean? Yeah. Coming in that yeah. first time.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's really just, we can break it down to the fact that like when we are on drugs and when we are picking up and when we are actively in active addiction, when you take all of that away immediately, it's awful because we were like self-medicating and yeah. like, you're just back to basics, and that's okay. You're an alcoholic. That's life.
Yeah, I'm trying to convert my solution to the, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
It's gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thanks for coming through.
Dude, thank you so for cool. having me. Lords of Chaos.
Yeah, so rad. Everyone,
it's like the biggest thing. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Like, you and like three other people. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Cool.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence.
All right, cool.
I'm really happy that I was able to talk to someone about my life today. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. I really appreciate you being
really
honest.
Really glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah.